It's time to run down the top news and information from Indiana's top industry. It's time for Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's most trusted and most listened to farm radio network. And I'll be joined on today's show by my colleagues Andy Eubank, who will take a look at market activity from this past week, meteorologist Ryan Martin, who shares his Indiana farm forecast, and CJ Miller, who helps me bring you the news from policy in D.C. and Indianapolis to what's happening in Indiana farm fields with planting season now upon us. We'll hear from Purdue Extension's soybean Sean Castile with some planting tips before you hit the field. We'll have some tariff talk on today's show, how those tariffs on China are impacting Hoosier farmers, and how is the White House measuring success from those tariffs? Indiana Senator Todd Young asked that question earlier this week. We'll bring you the answer. Let's begin in Indianapolis at the State House, where we finally saw some action on Senate Bill 1 this week. Senate Bill 1 was Governor Mike Braun's top priority this legislative session to provide property tax relief to Hoosier homeowners. Well, on Thursday, the Indiana House passed an amended version of Senate Bill 1, which does some of that and provides some tax relief for farmers and farmland owners. Here's CJ Miller.
Thank you, Eric. Well, Senate Bill 1 not only provides $1.4 billion in property tax relief to Indiana homeowners over the next 3 years, but $140 million in savings for Indiana's farmland owners over that same period as well.
Now, that's only 10% of what the homeowners will receive, but at least that's moving in the right direction.
And that's State Representative Kendall Culp. In a post on social media after the vote Thursday, Culp explained the details of the property tax relief bill as it impacts Indiana's homeowners.
They will get up to a 10% deduction or a $300 maximum cap taken off the bottom of their bill. So if your bill for your home is $2,000, then you will get to save $200. That would be the 10%. Or if it was $3,000, you will save the full $300 or the full 10% taken off of your tax bill. Also, we will phase in a larger deduction. So your basic homeowner homestead exemption goes away, and you will get 2/3 of the value of your home deducted off of your bill.
Culp also detailed the property tax relief the bill provides for Indiana's farmland owners.
In the farmland formula, they will take the capitalization rate and move that from 8% to 9%. That will cause a relief for farmers in the next 3 years. $140 million of savings. And then phasing in, we will have a 1/3 deduction of the assessed value of farmland deducted off. So a pretty good deduction for farmland and farmers as well.
Even though Culp says he's glad to see property tax relief for Hoosiers, he adds it's not nearly as much as what he would have liked to have seen.
I don't agree with everything in Senate Bill 1, but we look at this as a whole. It's a big win for property taxpayers. My surveys responded overwhelmingly that people wanted lower property taxes in Indiana, and that's what Senate Bill 1 delivers.
The bill now heads back to the Indiana Senate for their final approval. Governor Mike Braun says he's looking forward to having the bill sent to his desk for his signature. I'm CJ Miller.
Planting season is upon us. Once soils are fit, planters will hit the fields, and soybeans will likely be the first to go in the ground. Purdue Extension's soybean Sean Castile on the latest Purdue Crop Chat podcast, exclusively from Hoosier Ag Today.
As long as we got something that's pretty close to our target, that 50-degree mark, and sunshine's coming, I think we need to be pulling the trigger. I don't like open seed slots. We can get a buy. I know people probably do more than we should and get timely rains to help it to get through that, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, here in the next 10 days, 10 to 14 days, we're probably going to have a lot of beans turning over and getting in the ground.
Castile encourages growers to start looking at their seed bags that are coming in. He says we've got some seed lots that are on the lower side after a hot and dry season last year.
I'm getting calls and I'm getting emails and I'm getting some of my own supply that's running 80 to 85%.
He says soybeans can adapt. You'll just need to adjust your seeding rates.
And I'm normally 140,000 seed rate. Well, that's with 90% germ. Well, now if you had 80% germ, you just need to, you know, do the adjustments, right? That's going to put you probably more like 155, 160 if you want to plant the same number of viable seeds.
Another tip from Castile.
If you got these germ lots, these lots that are lower germs, I probably don't want to be planting those first. I think there's probably going to be a little bit of vigor issue. So if you are in more marginal conditions, make sure you're planting the one that's got the germ score. It's a little bit higher, and definitely with the one with the fungicide seed treatment.
Hear more from Soybean Sean and Purdue Extension's Dan Cornquinn in the Purdue Crop Chat in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, HoosierAgToday.com, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll have more farm news coming up here on Hoosier Ag this week. The Indiana Farm Forecast is on the way shortly as well. But right now, time to focus in on the markets. Another interesting week there with market analysis. Let's welcome in Andy Eubank.
Yes, for sure, Eric. It is always interesting. In the case of this past Friday, though, everything was higher. Corn, beans, and wheat all up, and the numbers coming up. We begin, though, with market analysis with Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. I spoke with him in the middle of Friday's session. Brian, we are looking at gains in corn again, a week full of gains in the corn market. Beans strong as well, and back to double digits in gains for Chicago wheat. So there is trouble in the outside markets, but money seems to be flowing to the grains and oil seeds.
Thanks for having me, Andy. Yeah, I think you summarized that well. The commodities are holding their own here. Corn, actually, futures are back at the highest level since the end of February. Beans here on Friday reached the highest level also since the end of February. Wheat is struggling, but it is have showing strength here on Friday due to some crop concerns. As you said, though, these are all trends in contrast to what we're seeing, for example, in the dollar, obviously, and the stock market's been an extreme roller coaster ride here this week. But we did get some news from USDA here this week that did this, provide a floor into the corn market.
Brian, let's dive a little bit more into USDA, what they had to say about corn and your thoughts about that.
The USDA on the corn market for the U.S. here, Andy, lowered the carryout to 1.465 billion bushel. The trade was looking for 1.510 billion bushel. I'd note that 1465 billion bushel estimate, Andy, was within the trade range of 1405 to 1605, but it was below the average estimate. That was due to a 100 million bushel increase in the export forecast, and that was only partly offset by a 25 million bushel decrease in the feed residual forecast. We are not surprised that the USDA increased the export forecast. We have been contending throughout the winter and early spring here, Andy, that this pace of export sales from the U.S. Has warranted an increase. And it's not out of the realm of possibility, not a prediction by any means, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that number eventually could increase a bit further. We'll have to see. I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but there certainly continues to be signs that the U.S. is the primary store in town, if you will, for corn in the world at the moment. And we still have quite a ways to go before that Brazilian crop is harvested there in July and August. So really the only other key competitor at the moment would be Argentina. That they're harvesting their crop now. Ukraine supplies are much lower than they were a year ago. We're looking at being in the driver's seat as such. There is some contention, Andy, that feed residual reduction of 25 million bushel by the USDA is too conservative, given that the low disappearance implied in that March 31st grain stocks report, low feed residual disappearance, I should say, during that December, January, February time period. That's a story for another day. Apparently, the USDA does not think it's too conservative.
Market analysis from economist Brian Basting with Advanced Trading. Brian's number 309-664-2314. On the Hat Friday Farm Market Review, 7.25 higher May corn. It goes to 490.25. July, 497, up 8.25. Dece up 9.25, 463.5. May beans, a gain of 13.75, 1042.75. July ends up 16.25, 1053. Novi, 1025.5, 20.75 higher. And strong in the wheat market with May, 555.75, up 17.75. In the meats, mostly higher. June live cattle, 196.80, up $1.60. And June lean hogs, 15 cents to the good, 93.32. Also later in the session on Friday, both crude oil and the stock market turned and went higher, posting nice gains. I'm Andy Eubank with the market update. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Times are uncertain in agriculture today. There's no farm bill, trade tariffs are looming, and the property tax debate is a mess. There is one thing you can depend on. Hoosier Ag Today is here to keep you informed. with all the information you need that's vital and relevant to your farming operation. Even if it isn't good news, you'll hear it here first at Hoosier Ag Today. On air, online, and at the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Indiana continues to ride the weather roller coaster. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's weekend weather outlook. And once again, we're looking at a weather pattern that is going to be wild and crazy here. Let's start with nearby. It's a chilly weekend, at least a start to the weekend. It's been chilly for the past several days, it feels. Just not what we would expect for mid-April. Well, I guess that's the problem. We've gotten spoiled here over the past couple of years with some very, very warm and dry Marches and Aprils. And I think this April is just actually acting more like an April normally should. Wild swings and cold air. And that's what we've seen this past week. A lot of cold air, and we're going to start to see the wild swings. As we move through the weekend, it is starting chilly. Now, I think today, not quite as cold as yesterday. And tomorrow, we actually see some south flow bump temperatures up close to normal for mid-April. So we're dry today with sunshine. Tomorrow, with the warm air coming in, I think we see some clouds trying to develop, and maybe we see a few spits and sprinkles, but mostly just clouds over the Hoosier State mixing with sunshine. The real fun begins overnight tomorrow night into Monday, as the warm air likely triggers a little bit of precipitation as a minor frontal boundary sags in from the northwest. So across northern parts of Indiana, I would say from I-70 north, just to make it simple, I think we have to allow for some spits and sprinkles, anywhere from a few hundreds to a few tenths, that is all. But there's not going to be any drying for Monday in those areas. Southern Indiana, just seeing some offshoot cloud cover. But the front that's sagging through does also usher in cold air for Tuesday, Wednesday, and early Thursday. We are dry those days, or at least that period, and we are going to be seeing some evaporation, but not super fast because of our cold temperatures. Getting into Thursday afternoon, that's when warm air races right back. The roller coaster goes back up the hill, and as the warm air comes in, triggers rain and thunderstorms. I look for 100% coverage of rain and thunderstorms from Thursday late afternoon and evening on through early Friday, anywhere from a quarter to three quarters of an inch of precipitation. And guess what? That's another frontal boundary. So what does it do? It brings back cold air. So good Friday. I think we're seeing clouds and occasional sunshine, but definitely a cold air surge. The Saturday before Easter, we stay chilly with mostly sunny skies. And then for Easter Sunday, warm air is coming back. Southwest flow is strong. I think we make it through most of Easter Sunday, partly to mostly sunny. And going into the Monday following, we kick off a very active weather pattern. That week of the 21st, I see chances of rain 4 out of 5 days. The big chance of rain comes late in the week, Friday into Saturday, with a strong frontal boundary pushing through. The rest of it's just going to be pop-up, hit-and-miss stuff through the week. Doesn't bode well for good drying. I'm Ryan Martin.
MicroEssentials S10 from the Mosaic Company delivers uniform nutrient distribution. Every single granule contains nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. MicroEssentials has superior nutrient distribution when compared to MAP or DAP blends. This means your crop does not have to search for those nutrients, improving nutrient uptake. Choose a superior phosphorus fertilizer with MicroEssentials. Contact your local ag retailer to learn more.
Welcome back to Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and there sure have been a lot of developments this past week regarding President Trump and his reciprocal tariff strategy. It was just a week and a half ago that Trump announced his tariff plan, which not only caused the stock market to fall sharply lower, but it also caused soybean futures and the livestock markets to also take a tumble. But it was last Wednesday afternoon President Trump announced he was hitting the pause button on tariffs for 90 days, and that the baseline for those reciprocal tariffs would be 10% across the board for all countries, that is, except for China. Trump has now raised the tariff rate on all Chinese goods to 145%. Meanwhile, China has since raised their rates on U.S. goods to 125%. But before Trump put a pause on his tariffs, Indiana Republican Senator Todd Young recently had questions about the overall impact that the tariffs would have on Hoosiers.
Trade retaliation doesn't fall on everyone evenly. It has a different impact on a New York tech firm than it might have on a Hoosier soybean farmer.
And that's Indiana Republican Senator Todd Young during a Senate Finance Committee hearing earlier this week.
This is creating some anxiety. This current tariff posture among some of my constituents. On balance, I would say most of my constituents are supportive, and they recognize that some turbulence might be required in order to end up in a better spot and reset trade relations.
But Young says that tariffs impact different businesses and different parts of the U.S. in different ways.
In Indiana, rural communities and export-driven manufacturers oftentimes feel the consequences, and they feel the consequences first.
U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer, who appeared before that committee hearing, was asked by Senator Young how the Trump administration is measuring the impacts of the recent tariffs.
You know, In other areas of federal policy, we have clear metrics or criteria to measure success. Does USTR have a formal process to evaluate whether these tariffs are actually achieving their goals?
Certainly, if other countries are bringing in their tariffs and their non-tariff barriers, that's a good indicator. That's the right direction. We also want to make sure that the trade deficit is going in the right direction. And that means two things. It means we have better access and we can export more to these other markets, but it also means that they're not using us as a dumping ground for their overproduction or their subsidized products. And so it goes both ways. And so it's a country by country analysis. We're looking at it case by case.
Young adds that measuring those effects and whether tariffs are meeting their goals should be part of our trade policy. Well, President Trump's escalating trade war with China has soybean producers concerned.
Because exports are the heart and soul of the soybean industry here in the United States.
And that's Caleb Ragland, president of the American Soybean Association. He's also a corn and soybean producer from Magnolia, Kentucky.
We export right at 50% of all of the soybeans we produce. And China in particular is our largest export customer, currently taking right at a quarter of all of U.S. production. So every fourth row of soybeans you see has currently been going to China.
He says the last trade war 7 years ago already cost U.S. soybean farmers a chunk of market share in China.
We have the precedent from the trade war in 2018. At that time, one out of three rows was going to China. And after all the dust has settled, we have never gained back that full market share that we had. We've lost about 9% of U.S. production that used to be exported to China that now isn't. And our competitors in South America, mainly in Brazil, have filled that spot. And China has partnered with them and invested in infrastructure and ports and rail and roads and bridges. And we're not likely to get that back.
Ragland adds that a new trade war with China will likely cost America's farmers even more overseas market share, something they can't be profitable without.
How that relates to now is that we give an opportunity to our competition, they're going to take that and gobble that up, and we're liable not to get it back. And we must have strong exports in order for the soybean industry and agriculture in general to remain strong in the U.S. And we're in a tough stretch with the farm economy already, and hurting exports in combination with the already struggling farm economy is very, very dangerous and very scary for us in ag.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. Well, tackling weeds and pests can be a real challenge, especially with tight margins. Eric Pfeiffer joins us once again to share some information about a product you may want to consider.
It's no secret that farm budgets are tight right now. Farmers are looking to make every dollar count across every acre. Chuck Broughton, the new head of Rovinza Next North America, says they're trying to help growers do that with their adjuvant, Wetsit.
Now, I'm sure for most growers already listening, they're saying, well, my retailer has an adjuvant, and they do. What we're finding with Wetsit versus a common adjuvant that you'd get at a retailer is ours has much better efficacy, quite frankly.
Broughton says Wetsit is a great option for use with pesticides, and it should be part of your weed control plan.
If you're looking at your weed control programs and saying, geez, I have to make every dollar count with my post-emergent herbicide sprays, I'd encourage you to get with your retailer and say, hey, what about this Wetsit adjuvant? And the retailer probably going to say, well, I have something just like it. And that's not exactly true. What I'd ask you to do is ask your retailer to bring in the Rovinza Next sales representative and have a briefing on what this product can do for you. We're confident that when you look at the value proposition of this product, that you're going to find that it has a really nice ROI and it can actually help you get better herbicide control.
When it comes down to it, Broughton hopes that you'll come to find that Wetsit will do just as you need it to in this economy. Make every dollar count on every acre.
With Wetsit adjuvant, we can make that product, that herbicide, stay on that leaf longer, allow more of that active ingredient to actually get into the plant that you're trying to kill, and give you a better return on investment.
To learn more about Wetsit, visit RovinzaNext.com. There's a link on our website as well, MichiganAgToday.com. I'm Eric Pfeiffer.
And speaking of tackling pests, coming up on Hoosier Ag this week, you'll hear why USDA is warning you about the harm that can be done to your farm, garden, and woodlands by invasive pests. That's coming up next, so don't you dare go anywhere. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Were we a product supplier and we've migrated to a business partner? So as the businesses have become complicated, complex, the speed, the decision making that needs to take place, we really play that role as a business partner in those operations and really look to support the businesses from all aspects, of which we're really fortunate when you think of those four core divisions, what we could provide holistically to that farm. So that would probably be the biggest change that we've seen. I think the other thing that as we move forward, we think around access to markets. How can we help provide that?
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, and thanks for making us part of your weekend. You are dialed in to Hoosier Ag This Week. From Hoosier Ag Today, I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer. Storms ripped across Indiana last week, leaving plenty of flooding and, in some cases, damage behind. Hoosier Ag Today Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin says the northern half of Indiana was hit by damaging winds, storms, and even some tornadoes.
Most notable, we had a couple of tornadic supercells that popped up over the northern parts of Indiana into southern lower Michigan, and then we actually had a couple more that worked their way through central parts of the state. The storm tracks that I hear the most about and we've been digging into the most in central Indiana, that Brownsburg to Carmel kind of area where a tornado came through out of one of the systems over the past week, and then up north midweek last week, we had one move through the Bourbon area.
South of Indianapolis, significant flooding is the story.
We've seen pictures of flooding off of the Ohio River, the White River spilling into some spots. Very, very impressive flooding pictures. But Eric, even if we're not seeing flooding, we picked up anywhere from 6 to 10 plus inches of rain in southern Indiana out of this. So even if it's not river flooding we're dealing with, we probably have some ponding. And even without ponding, you've got a super moist soil profile.
And that super moist soil profile is what will keep farmers from turning a wheel for a while, according to Martin. He says Mother Nature isn't quite ready to cooperate, with spits and sprinkles remaining in the near-term forecast. His prediction right now as to when farmers can get back in the field.
I'm looking at that week after Easter as one that may start to bump our temperatures up significantly, stringing together maybe a full week of above normal temperatures. That's issue number one. That helps. But issue two is less rain to no rain. And I think as we move into that later, that last full week of April time period, maybe we start to string together multiple dry days back to back. Can I give you a full 10 to 14 dry days back to back? Probably not.
Hear more from Martin and see his Indiana farm forecast at HoosierAgToday.com. The spotted lanternfly, Asian longhorn beetle, and Japanese honeysuckle. Just a few of the invasive pests and plants you'll find right here in Indiana. CJ Miller reports on the efforts to make you aware of the harm they can cause.
Invasive insects and plants cause damage to crops, agriculture, and our forest trees.
And that's Catherine Bronski with USDA's Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. She says April is Invasive Plant, Pest, and Disease Awareness Month.
We want to make sure that people are on the lookout for them, and also are able to report them if they see any signs of them.
Bronski says you could easily be transporting these pests and not even know about it. She especially warns about the dangers of invasive pests hiding in firewood.
Do not move untreated firewood. For example, do not bring firewood from your own yard to new areas, because wood boring pests like Asian longhorn beetle or the emerald ash borer can hide inside, and people can accidentally, unknowingly bring them to new areas. So instead, we recommend you buy heat treated firewood or gather wood on site where it's permitted.
She adds there's a special website you can check out to find out more and report invasive pests.
We recommend you visit hungrypests.com. It's a great website that shows pictures of what these pests and diseases look like. It gives information of, you know, where you can look in your own yard and make sure not to spread it to new areas. And it really does make a difference. Americans can do a lot to protect plant health and agriculture nationwide by taking these small steps to look out for them.
You can also learn more about the invasive pests found right here at home at Indiana's Department of Natural Resources website. You can also find that link at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
All right, CJ, thanks. And I hate to end this weekend show on a bit of a downer note, but this certainly shouldn't come as a surprise. The forecast for farming in 2025 and beyond is not a good one. And that's according to one of the country's leading ag economists.
That outlook is something we present to Washington every year. And this is the worst one we've ever taken in and shown him.
That's Dr. Joe Outlaw, professor and extension economist at Texas A&M, talking about his most recent survey of farmers.
The problem is that we forecast out the next 5 years, and unless some sort of policy change gets made with the prices where they look to be going, farmers would endure loss after loss after loss, which would build, and it would be the worst outlook.
Outlaw says a new farm bill would help, but...
Because this is my eighth one, I've been around a lot of them, I think that we're going to get elements of a farm bill and some other piece of legislation, which would be the key things that farmers need. Maybe we don't get a farm bill in name like a lot of people want till later in the year or something, but I think some of the elements that need for the safety net will be included in something else.
An outlaw believes that all it would take to get a new farm bill across the finish line is money.
They've got to figure out, agree to the savings and what they're going to take money from. And as we stand here today, they need about $50 billion to make it, to do the new farm bill, where people would want to have a farm bill. I mean, why have one if we're not going to make significant improvements? So we need about $50 billion.
Well, things can only go up from here, right? Let's hope. That does it for this weekend's edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. Thank you for joining us. If you missed any of today's show, find the podcast version at HoosierAgToday.com or in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app. We'll do it again next weekend. Same hat time, same hat channel. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.